Welcome to Geek Speak, bridge of the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. Right now, it's December 5th. We're on Pacific Avenue in downtown Santa Cruz in the back of a truck. And welcome, everybody. We're number 5 on the parade. And it's time now, of course, for Geek Speak.
We're through being cool. We're through being cool.
Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. With me this morning are Al Luckow. He's a new media architect. Good morning, Al.
Hello, everybody.
And Ben Jaffe. Good morning, Ben.
Morning.
Ben, you're not a student. You're more of a slacker. No,
I don't know what I am anymore.
You're a great guy, though, that's for sure.
Oh, thanks.
It is strange to be not just a naked face on the radio, but out here in the public.
I don't know if this has ever been done before.
I don't
think
it is.
We're broadcasting. I mean, you always hear radio from a parade, but you don't hear broadcasting from a float in the parade like we are right
now. Exactly. Normally it's parked somewhere and they're saying, coming up next is, but us, we're just driving along
through
the show.
We're moving. We're moving people.
Never seen Pacific Avenue like this.
It's neat.
And we're doing this via Skype through a Sprint wireless card, and we're also we have a backup with a phone, the cell phone. But let's get on with the geek news as we do every week.
Right.
And Al, I think I'll start with you.
Sure.
Let's do the video game.
Okay.
Let's do some video game talk.
All right. Well, it seems that of all places, of course, it's Taiwan. A man has decided to marry a video game character.
A character or someone's playing a video game character?
No, it's an actual character in the game. The game is a Nintendo DS dating sim.
It's a dating sim, so it's designed for this kind of thing.
Well, I don't know. I understand these sim games, really. But the character is called Love Plus, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And this guy is a Japanese gamer known as Sal9000. And he was officially wed to, I guess the official name is Nene Aneganasaki, one of the game's three virtual girlfriends. It's must have been one of the weirdest ceremonies in the history of any kind of wedding.
Did they bring a laptop into a church or something?
They had a little picture of the thing, and the guy had a reception. And
that's just sad.
You know,
wonderful.
Video games. I mean, they have a place, but I don't know that you should be marrying the characters.
Yeah, I don't know. Technology these days, though.
You got to get out and do a few things. There are real people and real things out there.
Okay, so besides besides, of course, doing the marriage of a video game character, can we talk about some technology that's kind of serious? Like, I don't know, the best and most impressive tool we've ever made?
Yes, the best and most impressive, or at least the most complex tool we've ever made, machine we've ever made, is the particle accelerator at CERN, the Large Hadron Collider. So basically, the idea is that this machine smashes proton beams together, and in these high-energy collisions, we're trying to create new forms of matter. On Monday, which was only 6 days ago, the LHC accelerated two proton beams in opposite directions, and each had an energy of 1.18 trillion volts, which is a world record now. The Tevatron in Chicago, I think, had a record power level of 0.98 TeVs, and so the LHC is...
So we can officially say it's online.
It's officially online, and it's broken the record. Now, here's the bad news. On Wednesday, the LHC suffered another major power failure.
Did a bird drop a bread?
I wonder why.
There were no baguettes involved in this outage. But yeah, it actually shut down the entire computer center, the main computer center. It took out some of their associated websites, and the particle accelerator shut down. Now, everyone likes to kind of make fun at how often the LHC breaks, but really this isn't a huge issue. They're going to be online at least in a couple days, if not sooner. And the magnets are still chilled. That was the main issue before.
Right, they don't have to freeze
them. It's like getting all of that.
I just want to do a shout-out to Union Grove Music. This actually, some of this equipment was bought by Union Grove. We're passing it right now on Pacific Avenue.
Oh, look at that.
And then here's the Catalyst, a famous music place. If you're interested in good music in Santa Cruz, the Catalyst
playing.
Is awesome.
Ice Cube is playing, I guess.
Froyo is behind you.
I can't see. I got to turn around.
And Rocker's Pizza Kitchen. I've had pizza there. That's pretty good. It's kind of fun to be down here on the mall.
Yeah.
So, if any of you are in your cars and you want to chase us, we're crossing Cathcart Street right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Cathcart and Pacific.
All right. So, thank you very much for the LHC update. Let's go ahead and talk about Apple denying some support to some people. Apple's being a little bit of a little judgmental.
It turns out Apple has denied. This is reported by The Consumerist. It's reported that two Mac users were denied AppleCare coverage because the owners were smokers.
Smokers. What do you mean the owner? Not, so they brought their machines in?
No, not because the computers were damaged by secondhand smoke.
And not because they were smoking in the store.
No, they weren't smoking in the store, but it has to do with OSHA regulations. According to some reports, they brought the machines into the Apple store,
uh-huh.
and they really reeked of cigarette smoke.
And the geniuses
and
said,
the
no.
geniuses said, hey, cigarette smoke is a hazardous substance, and we don't have to work on this if we have to smell the smoke.
Right, right.
So Apple denied the service to the people, and then they took this all the way up to Steve Jobs, of course, said, well, yeah, you know, they don't have to work on it if it smells like smoke.
Well, I mean, if you had, like, some, like, acid, you know, leaking from
yeah.
some horrible...
Yeah.
thing you'd expect them to not
right.
use them.
Yeah. But they held it up, and I guess the idea is that it's dealt with on a case by case basis, and each store can decide whether they want to service the machine or not.
Uh-huh.
But just a you know, a word out to you smokers, if you smoke and you know you're using your Mac as an ashtray, it might not be
something you want to do because you can't take the machine back in.
Yeah.
we had a bit of a non-broadcast thing. We're not broadcasting right now to the Civic Garden Mall. Of course, we're still on the radio. Hello.
Yep. Hey, here's my wave. I'm doing my parade wave.
There's our Google wave. Okay, we're back up.
Go ahead. Great. So right now we are in front of Shogun Restaurant. And we're also in front
Del Mar
of
Theater.
The Del Mar Theater's right behind me. I couldn't see it.
And
wonderful. Hello, everybody on Pacific Avenue. Hey, family.
Wow, look at all these people.
That's a lot of people. Come on down and see the parade. We're, of course, only see a few things behind us is uh-huh. the Woodies. In front of us is the Santa Cruz Marching Band. And, of course, we're live broadcasting on air on KOSP 88.9, and we're covering the Geek News.
And the butterflies up there. I can see the butterflies.
Yeah, they're beautiful.
The little kids dressed up in butterfly outfits.
So Apple stops supporting computers that have smell like smoke.
Well, no, it's a case-by-case basis, but if you bring your Mac into the Apple store and it smells like smoke, they may say they're not going to service this because of OSHA regulations. So.
All right, let's go on to let's go on to Ben's next story. Ben, what's going on? Google, what's going on with Google?
So Google has acquired the company AppJet. Any of you guys remember what AppJet was?
AppJet, yeah, we had him on for a little while ago.
Yes. Do you happen to remember what the product was that AppJet makes?
AppJet. Oh man, I don't remember the product. What was it?
We had CEO Aaron Iba on the show, and they make
Etherpad.
Guess who's being acquired by Google?
Wow,
nice. That's so funny because we talked entire time about Etherpad being a lot like Google Wave,
yeah.
and whether they're going to be similar.
Yeah, we
it
actually
looks like it is.
Talked
so,
about
so
that
we,
in the interview.
So we actually scooped that.
I think we did.
You know,
we should have bought AppJet and then resold them to Google.
Why didn't we do that?
Actually, you know what? I'm thinking about selling this roll of tape to Google.
Yes, I think you know. Yeah, what? I'll sell this truck to Google.
Is there anything around here we can sell to Google? Because they're buying everything
to Google.
I mean, I can.
And now we're passing Palookaville. Oh wait, that's not Palookaville anymore.
Oh, it was Palookaville.
And you know, Walnut Avenue Cafe. It's a great little cafe. All right, so let's go ahead and go down to the next story, and that of course is Mr. Luckow. What's going on with you've been covering a lot of game stuff.
Yeah. Well, let's just keep with the game thing.
All right.
This is the world's top World of Warcraft player.
The best World of Warcraft player?
Yes. It's a Taiwanese guy,
uh-huh.
and he's just got these insane Warcraft accomplishments. He's nabbed every single one of the game's achievements. And that's he's the first player to complete all 986 tasks listed in the game's armory.
So he's finished everything.
Yeah. So
he can now go get a life?
Well, considering that 11.5 million people play the game worldwide, that's kind of an amazing achievement.
That is.
His name is, he plays as a Terran druid. Uh-huh. His name is Little Gray, and he's racked up some staggering numbers. He's completed nearly 6,000 quests at the rate of 14.5 per day and killed nearly 500,000, you know, of his enemies.
Mm-hmm.
And he only died 8,543 times. So
that's not all that much.
It says he's a bit of a loner. He's only waved at other players just once. But you know, I don't know about you, but you could also say this guy is probably the world's biggest loser.
Oh, man,
I mean,
that's just
really,
so harsh.
If what does it take to rack up that many points? There's a thing out there called the real world, and personally, I think this guy should go out and see it.
Oh, that's, you know, I mean, Al, that's harsh. And
there's something to say about games. They're fun, but you know, when you are like the world's best World of Warcraft player, you are spending way too much time in front of your computer.
I agree.
You know, I mean, that game, I tried playing it, and you know, it takes me forever to do anything in that game.
Yeah, but you're the wrong generation now. Sorry, man. Speaking of the right generation, Ben, what's going on with the Spitzer Image?
I'm the right generation?
Sure.
Ah, that's sweet.
You don't play World of Warcraft, do you?
No, I don't.
He can quit.
Don't
he says
play.
He can quit anytime that's he wants.
Right. So the Spitzer Telescope has produced a mosaic of our galaxy, which is absolutely fantastic. It's actually on display at. It's 4 feet tall. And
oh,
it
it's a
is,
printout.
Yes, it's a printout.
Well,
not no, it's actually an image as well. It's a composite of 800,000 separate Spitzer images.
That's a lot of time in Photoshop.
That's images. That's full images. The full image is 2.5 billion pixels.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pixels.
It's huge. And when they printed it, they displayed it at 4 feet tall and 180 feet long.
Whoa.
Now,
where did it... So they display, like, inside, I'm assuming.
Yeah, inside in a planetarium.
Very
now,
cool.
One of the really cool things about this is that it's only a very, very small section of the sky. It's a few degrees of the sky vertically and 130 degrees horizontally. So if you spread out your arms wide, that's how horizontal it is. And if you hold out your finger in front of your face like this...
The width of your finger?
Yeah,
that's
the width of your finger is how much they image.
Wow.
Only, like, a degree or two.
Wow.
But... They actually managed to image half of the galaxy this way because the galaxy, they imaged on the same plane as the galaxy.
Right, right.
And so, it's half the Milky Way galaxy and it's printed out. It's absolutely beautiful, beautiful image. And they, for anyone who's really interested, it's 3.6 to 24 microns is what they mapped out.
It's
a red, green, blue.
Well, we just passed, let's see, we've got Bookshop Santa Cruz behind me, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're getting very close to the mall, and we're only 20 minutes into the show. We're going to have to loop around and do it again, I think.
Yeah, I'd do it. It's fun.
It's very fun. And, of course, we're planning on taking questions, but if we leave all the audience behind, it's going to be hard for us to take questions. We'll have to park on a side street somewhere and ask.
We're going pretty fast.
Questions. Well, yeah, you know, the marching band is just fast. What can you say?
Huh.
We could definitely slow down. Hey, everybody! All right, let's go on to the next news story. And, Al, that's you.
Okay.
Let's go ahead and talk about the iPhone app. We'll be talking about it a lot pretty
this
soon.
This would be
right?
handy to have right now. It's called Knocking Live Video, and it's an iPhone app that you're able to download. Actually, it's free at the moment, and you can download it and share live video with your other buddies on iPhones that are on the 3G network. So this is the new iPhone, you know, the 3GS or 3G.
Right.
And you can both open up the app, and you can... you know, show each other video, live video. I mean, this is the closest thing to Dick Tracy's watch that I've seen, you know, I mean, just directly on your phone and doing this. Now, I actually downloaded this application and tried it out, and, you know, it didn't work. And I just really wanted it to work, and I saw this stuff about it, and so I ended up emailing the company, and the CEO emailed me back.
Okay.
And actually, the three founders, Brian Meehan, Jim Montello, and Lisa Cherbone Montalo. And they said that what they're having is the Oprah effect. You know, everybody has downloaded this app because they all want to watch live video from their phones, watching other people. And they've just gotten hundreds of thousands of people trying to view this live video all at once. And they've got an update coming out in 2 weeks. So if you know, I were you, I would go out and maybe get this app, you know, just to try it on. And heck, it's free. Which is amazing. I mean, I'd be willing to pay for an app like this. Of course, it has to work. I prefer the app to work.
That's
is usually,
how normally it works for me, too.
It's usually
when I
high
pay for
on my
of, yeah, of
list of things. But of still, I mean, come on. Live video, phone to phone. That's the way to go, man. I mean, well, I'm there.
I'd say right now it takes about 20 minutes to drive down Pacific Avenue. Wouldn't you guys agree? Because we're at the end of Pacific Avenue.
Uh-huh.
Well, Pacific, of course, continues a little ways. With the clock tower and right next to the U.S. Post Office. And I'm assuming that we'll have to find a spot to crash and keep doing the show so we can get some audience questions, but I don't know how that's going to work. So if you know, come help us out. We're a little lost down downtown Santa Cruz.
Yeah.
All right. We do have more news stories, and we might as well keep going with them.
Yeah.
Well, Ben, you want to talk about...
brain surgery?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about brain surgery.
Brain surgery. So one could call it the most famous brain, or at least the most important brain. It's the brain of HM, as he was known during his lifetime to protect his privacy, Henry Molaison. This is the man who had brain surgery for seizures way back in like 1940, 46 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And he
so much for the privacy.
Yeah. Well, he recently died. That's why we know. But yeah, he died actually a year ago on Wednesday, and they're dissecting his brain. Now, the reason his brain is so important is because after this surgery, his seizures went away, but he could not form new memories.
Oh, there's like movies about that.
Yeah, I'm there's
Groundhog Day or not.
Was he able to live in the moment and in the present, or is he?
I don't know. I haven't seen any of those movies. That's I just read this news story, but yeah. So it's a really fantastic. It's a good brain. If anyone's seen Young Frankenstein, and they're dissecting it because they want to try and figure out why this brain can't form new memories, whereas everyone else can.
Right.
What is it about this brain that's different? It's something, of course, to do with what they took away.
You would think.
You would think.
Well, let's say we did surgery, and then the brain stopped working normally. Yeah. I wonder what happened.
I don't know.
Maybe we damaged the brain.
It would have been something you did.
So, anyway, it was Wednesday and Thursday, I think it was. Maybe it was Thursday and Friday, that they sliced up this brain into 2,500 tissue samples. And they're mapping it, almost like a Google Maps kind of thing, but three-dimensional. So they can look at this tissue and study it and try and figure out what exact how the brain forms memories.
Very cool.
All of that kind of stuff. It's really cool.
Excellent.
And he consented to having his brain.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, I'm thinking that we should go ahead and take the truck and go on to Cooper Street. See if we can get a little closer to the crowd so we can start having people ask us questions, if that's something we can do. We're on a back street right now. It's and of course the station's saying don't crash the truck, so that's a good idea. I think that's totally valid. Well, thanks for the brain surgery discussion. This wasn't your problem, right? You have good memory.
I have awful memory, but I can form occasional memories.
Okay.
So it's different.
Okay. So if you have to give up on life, Al's got the greatest thing to give up on. Al, you want to talk about a little paper shredder that you heard about?
Yeah. Sometimes you just really. I don't know. You just need to see something shredded.
Will it blend?
Will it blend? You know,
I love that.
Blended that iPhone that one time.
Will It Blend is a neat website, but it's kind of small.
It's basically a guy that sells blenders.
It's a blender.
He takes anything you want, put it in the blender, fits in the blender, and destroys it.
But this is a different website. It's called, and we'll have a link to this, and they even have a thing called Shred of the Month. There's a video that shows them how they built this shredder. All right, it's 15 feet tall and 30 tons. It's really amazing. And then they start throwing things into it, like a refrigerator and a sofa and one of those giant tires from those huge, enormous dump trucks that they do giant construction things with. You really got to see this because they have all these neat things they throw in this. And then if you go to the Shred of the Month, they have like little skits where a woman tells her son to clean his room, and he says, I'll clean my room when I get around to it. And then she ends up shredding all his clothes. And they show a thing where they have like hundreds of hard drives.
Right.
And then they drop the hard drives in the thing, and they all come out as like little tiny slivers.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, the thing is amazing.
That's a way to get rid of data.
So
how big of a thing can it take? Can you like do, you can do a large item?
You could probably drop a VW in there.
Okay. Not with the engine.
Oh my gosh.
And it comes out in little like 1-inch pieces. And it's, you know, sometimes during the middle of the day, you just want to see something shredded.
That is not something you want to fall into.
No, I wouldn't. My sleeve is, you want to keep your sleeves away from it and all that.
Right, right. Okay, so we're turning down, where are we? We're on Soquel Avenue now, heading back down to Pacific, and we're just going to kind of park at the end, right down here and just kind of stop in the road.
Yeah.
We'll probably get an audience to come ask us tech questions, I'm hoping. We are broadcasting live today from downtown Santa Cruz. We're in the holiday parade here on Pacific Avenue. We finished the parade, and we're kind of driving around looking for a home. So if you want to come and join us, we're on Soquel Avenue between Front Street and Pacific. Come on down, ask us tech questions if you'd like. In a few minutes, we'll be inviting you to do that. All right, so we got time for one more before we do the middle break. How about iPhone credit card stuff? We've done iPhone checks, or taking a check with a photograph and then processing that check.
Yeah, and that's pretty cool and everything, but maybe the Square can one-up that. It is an iPhone credit card reader, And the idea is that you can plug it into, of all things, the headphone jack, it turns out. And this little block of plastic basically gets power and everything from that. And you can swipe your card over it, and it'll read the magnetic strip, convert that into audio data, which will then be sent off to some server somewhere. That's where it'll be decoded.
The audio jack?
The audio jack, yes.
How does it have power in there? There's not much power there. I mean, it's the biasing of the microphone. Which can buzz your tongue, by the way. I found it last night when I was making this gear.
Really?
Yeah. I kind of shocked myself a little bit. Like a 9-volt battery.
Oh, yeah. You soldered some stuff together.
Yeah, well, to get
soldered
the feed to
for the British people.
Yeah, you should, people, you should see our truck. You know,
we're a geek experience.
We're doing a little time lapse, too, of our experience on this float. And you know, we're just, like, covered in wires and on this table and this flatbed truck. You know.
The theater department from UCSC is driving the truck. We have Joe Weiss and Eric Mack. They're both great tech guys at the at UCSC, and they're driving us. We've got signs up. We've got microphone wireless to have questions asked and answered, but we're not in front of an audience right now, unfortunately. We're down on the side street. So if you can hear us and you want to come down and ask us tech questions, please do so. We'd love to have you join us.
Now, the huge but, briefly, on the iPhone credit card reader is that Europe is moving away from magnetic strips. They're using in-card chip tech things. It's crazy technology.
Oh, instead of magnetic strip. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that stuff...
The smart chips. Yeah. Actually a processor and something that actually encodes and decodes on the on the card.
Yes. Yeah. So that's way, 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 way more secure than the magnetic strips that we have right now, which are, you know, nothing. Now, so that could be a potential problem for this. I mean, if they wanted to do that kind of circuitry...
But you can effectively get an iPhone app and this card reading thing, go down and start selling stuff right on the street with just your phone.
Yes, yeah.
You process credit cards right on the fly, and that's pretty
wirelessly
cool.
With your iPhone and everything.
We could be selling T-shirts right now.
We could be selling T-shirts. Yeah, that'd be pretty fantastic.
Amongst the other things we're doing at the moment.
Yeah, I think we're doing enough probably.
Yeah, I think we're a little more busy enough. But the really cool thing about this technology is it's cheap. It's very, very cheap to manufacture to convert this magnetic information into audio information. So there you go.
I've seen things, you know, with the credit cards that it was actually going to be one of my USB things, but it wasn't really crazy enough. It was like it's like a little egg. It looks like an egg. And you slide, when you're navigating on the web, you slide your credit card through it when you want to make a purchase. And it will actually take your credit card information and encrypt it and then send it to the place. It's supposed to be the most secure way of buying something on the web using your credit card because, of course, it's Windows only. But
okay. So the idea here is that it's kind of the teller for you to some degree. Like stores your information, only puts it on the website correctly, that kind of thing. Seems a little weird just to add another layer in there.
Well,
I mean, you're still kind of dealing
apparently
with it.
It's able to really... encrypt the information. It's some really super strong encryption, and you know it's kind of convenient. You're at a website and you get to the point, and then when you look at the form where it says add your credit card here, there's a little red thing that automatically comes in with this application that says blocked or locked. Or
so
something.
Basically, it probably is a proxy, a web proxy. So when the web browser actually submits, it actually goes through this software package, and that's when the credit card's injected. So the web browser never actually has a copy of it.
Right.
That's pretty cool, clever.
Yeah.
This also means that you're not typing it, and you don't have to type it in, which means that the keyboard has a keyboard tap on it, then you're protected from that perspective.
Yep,
that's very cool.
Yep, yeah,
it was
exactly. That's the other thing is that you can't record the keystrokes and stuff.
Yeah,
you're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP. We're in downtown Santa Cruz, living live from the back of a truck, moving throughout Santa Cruz, broadcasting Geek Speak today. The geeks today are Al Luckow and Ben Jaffe. My name's Lyle Troxel. Driving the truck today is Joe Weiss, and helping out with all things technical, Eric Mack, and we have Rick, who's got a wireless mic to ask questions. And some other people around as well. Geek Speak on KUSP is supported by Henry J. Ramirez DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation and offering one appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Well, we can go ahead and start asking questions. Let's go ahead and, is that powered back up? That is powered back up.
Yes.
And Rick, are you with me right now? Can you go ahead and speak to me?
Good morning, Lyle.
Good morning, Rick. So, Rick, we're going to go ahead and ask questions of... Well, we're going to go ahead and let people ask us questions, tech questions. If you see somebody that seems like they might be interested in asking us a question, go ahead and grab them. Of course, we can't stray too far from the truck, and we're kind of on a back street. But let's go ahead and do some more news as we wait. I believe, Al, it is your turn. And, well, what's Zoom Safer?
Zoom Safer. That's actually kind of a good thing to bring up right now because we're on. We probably wouldn't be able to do the show if you're using Zoom Safer. Maybe
okay.
We could. What it is it's a free service that uses your phone's GPS sensors to determine whether you're driving, you're at driving speeds. And if you're at driving speeds, it disables your phone, so you can't use your phone while you're driving. Now, you may say, well, that's, you know, why not just turn your phone off or something? The problem is people don't do that. And if you're a person that says, I just can't be trusted, you know, people are actually signing up for this because they don't trust themselves to turn off their phone.
Right. If their phone rings, they pick it up. So this thing, basically, your phone don't ring.
Your phone won't ring because it'll sense, oh, you're moving too fast. You must be in the car.
This is really smart for teenagers, too. Like
right.
A parent,
you oh, know, yeah. Well, that's the other thing. I mean, you could force your teenager to have it, and then they wouldn't be able to talk.
How does it work? Is it a software that runs on the app, on the phone, or is it
something like a service? It says that it's an app.
Uh-huh.
So I would, it is an app, and it works on the major cell.
Right, any of the major cell phones.
BlackBerry.
Right.
You know, the smartphones.
Probably the iPhone thing.
It's just really hard for Americans to not do, you know, just to say, okay, I'm just not going to answer the phone.
Right.
And they also have a service where it will tell the caller, you can't answer, and then it will tell them where you are and why.
Oh, very cool.
You have to opt in.
Right.
But they'll say, oh, you know, Al can't answer his phone because he's in a parade.
Right.
In downtown Santa Cruz, moving at, you know, 70 miles an hour down there.
In case you might need to know that. Someone would call you and might need to know that. Or Ben can't call because he's currently being shredded. You know, something like that.
No, not me. Not me.
All right, good.
I'm too young to die.
Mm-hmm.
All right, everybody down on Pacific Avenue. If you can hear my voice, you can ask us tech questions. We're broadcasting live on KUSB. I know there's not very many people around us. I'm sure someone could hear us over there. But, of course, they're interested in the parade. And who wouldn't be? It's
rightfully so.
Well, Ben, you're very quickly running out of things to talk about today. You got some backup.
I've got some more.
Amazing.
I've got backup.
Let's talk about dinosaurs. No, let's talk about birds.
Dinosaurs?
Oh, how can you tell the difference?
Oh, dear. I love your segues.
No, you don't. You hate me.
So there are these some researchers from Germany and Canada, and they're studying black caps, which are a kind of European bird. And they say that they're observing right now some anthropogenic microevolution. So this is some evolution.
What now did you say?
Anthropogenic, meaning human caused. So we're causing it. Microevolution in this bird species.
What is happening to this bird? I've heard about a crab that does this. Do you hear about this crab? This is great.
Tell me about the crab.
I don't know anything about it except there's a crab living in the ocean. People that would fish for this crab and get them. And some of them kind of looked like a face. And so the ones that looked too much like a face, they'd be like, ooh, it's magic. So they'd throw it back in the ocean. Well, after about 50 years of doing this, all the crabs have faces.
Wow. Yeah.
So something like that?
It's kind of like that, except the opposite way, where basically in the UK, bird feeders about 50 years ago became popular. And that means that these migratory birds didn't have to fly as far because they could find food during the winter.
Right.
So instead of going to southern Spain, they would migrate, some of them, to the UK. And they'd find food during the winter in the bird feeders and everything. And now this is what's really cool. These are two separate groups, right? A couple things. One, they're pretty exclusive in their mating patterns they found. So they pretty much only mate within their own group of either migrating to the UK group or migrating to southern Spain group.
Okay.
And then the other thing is they've actually noticed differences in the bird's beaks, wings, and plumage. So the birds that go to the UK are starting to have longer and narrower beaks, which are much more conducive to eating seeds and fat from bird feeders, right? Instead of the birds that go to southern Spain, which eat fruit off of trees.
And they had crabby faces.
Yes, yeah. These birds. Now, the interesting thing that makes it a little bit fishy with me is that this microevolution is dependent on our ability to consistently feed the birds out of bird feeders, right? So if they have like a huge economic collapse or something, then people won't be filling up their bird feeders, and then those birds won't be able to eat. And then they'll die.
They'll revert back to doing the natural way.
Well, no, they won't, because they're now this group that goes to the UK. Not only that, but they're physically
changed.
They're changed.
That's cool.
So, yeah.
All right, keep feeding the birds in the UK is what we're saying.
Yeah.
Keep feeding the birds. They're almost domestic.
You've got yourself into it. Don't stop now. but it's really cool to see a theory like evolution actually happen before our eyes within this kind of reasonable time span. Even though it is microevolution, it's still pretty cool.
Very cool. Thank you very much, Ben. All right, we've got someone down on Pacific Avenue that wants to ask us a tech question. So, hi. Welcome to Geek Speak. What's your name?
My name's Greg. Thanks.
Hi, Greg. So what's your question today, Greg?
I have a question about my Apple iWeb website.
Okay.
I want to know why, when I create a website or a web page on Apple, why the the URL code comes out kind of funny, like web.me.greg or whatever. I just kind of want a regular, like, HTML code.
Like a normal website you could tell people about.
Yeah.
www.blahblahblah.com.
Yeah, I have my it's like hosted, I guess, on GoDaddy, but that I build it for my web.
Right. Have you, so you host it, you build it for my web. So what are you saying? Is it actually on your domain have you uploading it to GoDaddy or are you uploading it to Apple?
To Apple.
Okay, so.
And I masked it, so I had.
So you're masked.
So my thing is like www, but it always
so
just.
So what you can, Apple does provide custom domain names. And so you can ask Apple to host your custom domain, which means that at GoDaddy you would point your domain name to Apple's domain name servers. And this is all like help files on Apple.
Cool.
And
okay.
Then you would get your custom domain on that you've bought through GoDaddy. Apple would actually provide your website from that URL.
Got it.
And I have a friend that's done that, and it seems to work pretty well.
Really?
The next problem about iWeb has to do with the paths inside iWeb. When it generates the HTML files, it has a whole bunch of subfolders and stuff. Sometimes it can get kind of buried in. So you have your website. What's your website address?
GregArcher.com.
Greg Archer. Greg Archer, what do you do?
I'm the editor of Good Times.
Oh, okay. That's why I heard your name.
I'm familiar with
Thanks
that publication.
Thanks for sitting right in front of this great newspaper, by the way.
That's right. We're right in front of Good Times.
Yeah,
that's great.
Yeah.
I worked at Good Times for probably 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah.
Early 90s. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was a designer for the cover.
We miss you.
Well, I escaped.
I don't even know who you are, but, you know, you look pretty cool.
Well, you know.
I'm sure you're a cool geek.
This is Al Luck Al, actually. Yeah. So, yeah, that's the solution to that, is that you go up to Apple's site or you go up to the iWeb environment and research the custom domain name is what it's going to be called.
Great. I got a question for you guys.
All right, go ahead.
What do you love most about doing what you're doing?
Right now?
Well, like in general.
In general.
Geek Speak,
on Geek Speak.
Which is a phenomenon.
Connecting with the community, I guess.
It
I guess
is.
Me.
It's good stuff.
Al?
Fills in my Saturday morning.
Yeah.
Nice. Al's kind of dedicated to make really good audio. He normally records this USB thing of the week, which is a wonderful blast. We don't have it recorded today, but Al's pretty dedicated. And, of course, the new logo. You see the logo on the side of the truck?
I saw.
That's our new Geek Speak logo.
Very
and business
cool.
cards.
My favorite thing is probably the three-hour-long public transit ride down to Santa Cruz.
Ben lives in Berkeley and comes down every
And then the three-hour ride station. Back.
This is dedication, folks.
What's your name?
Oh, yeah.
What's your name?
Ben Jaffe.
I want all the listeners out there to, like, give Ben an applause. 3 hours one way and 3 hours back.
Not if you're in your car.
No,
not
no,
if you're driving in your car.
You what could, dedication.
You could drive
awesome,
with your
man.
Knee.
You can drive with your knee, but not safely.
Oh. Thanks for your help.
Hey, thanks for the call. Thanks for the walking by.
Yeah, well, it's all good. It's good times.
Thank you.
See, when you do Geek Speak from the back of a truck and a float, everything changes. It's not the air room anymore. It's the air truck,
did
right?
Did I say
it's
earlier, in the air room with me?
I yeah, you did.
Oh,
I think,
my gosh.
Actually, I'm not sure.
No, it's a virtual air room.
Weird.
So in the air truck with
so
me.
So taking questions from the audience works to some degree. Of course, not everybody can hear us. So if you can hear us, come and ask us a tech question. Ask us anything you'd like. We can answer questions about electronics. We can answer questions about software, about iPhones, about design. If you want to talk about color, what's your favorite color?
My favorite color? Yeah. I think, according to my daughter, it's blue.
That's her favorite color. Your favorite color is blue. She's told you this?
I have lots of favorite colors, but with when you have kids, you basically have to pick one and tell them that's your favorite color
right.
so that they
right, you don't change it.
My dad likes blue. You know, you don't say, oh, I like this today or that today.
Right, no, that just confuses everybody.
My
what?
Favorite color is the color of the sun through a raindrop.
Aww.
Oh, it's so beautiful.
That's so beautiful.
It's magical.
A rainbow. It depends on what angle you're standing at. That's the moral.
I see.
So, we talk about social environment stuff all the time, Twitter and Facebook and things of that nature. And I've heard a lot about Bing, but what is Bing?
Bing is Microsoft's attempt to face Google off in the search engine wars, right?
See, I said it's a social engineering. It's search engine, of course. I feel so stupid. I yes. better Twitter that right now.
Yeah, tweet is the proper. Oh, actually, no, I'm not sure. I was listening to the fantastic podcast Grammar Girl, and she was talking about the difference between, like, what's the proper verb of to tweet? Is it to tweet?
Did
to
she
Twitter?
Cover that? Yeah.
Yeah, she did. She had a whole episode on Twitter.
Listen, Grammar Girl, we one time I decided to ask her to be on the show, right? So mm-hmm. I send her a note and said, it's kind of short notice, but I know you do Skype, so will you be on the show? And she said, well, where's KUSB? I was like, it's on 7th Avenue in Santa Cruz. She's like, well, I can walk down the street. I'm like, what?
Really?
She was living on,
wow.
like, 7th Avenue, two blocks from the station.
The Grammar Girl.
Within a half an hour
no way.
Of me calling her, she was in the studio with us. Great show. Look up on the Geek Speak
Oh, that's
archives.
Fantastic. Anyway, so here's the news with Bing. Bing disappeared off the internet for a half an hour a couple days ago.
Whoops.
And yeah, whoops. Now, Gizmodo wrote an article about this.
Speaking of disappearing, I'm going to have you disappear on this news story, but we're going to get back to it because we have another call question.
Okay, I'm
going to
pause
audience.
For a moment.
It's not a call. It's a walk-up. Chip, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Well, thank you. How are you guys doing?
We're doing quite well. Chip, you're the organizer extraordinaire of this wonderful parade.
I am. I'm Chip from the Downtown Association, and I wanted to come say hello. And my technical question you actually answered a couple of weeks ago when I said, how can we get GeekSpeak in the parade to broadcast from the parade when you're there?
And we did
it. It's impossible.
And so did you already explain to the listeners what you're doing and how you're broadcasting?
We've been pretty abstract on it, but I could get into the details. I think that'd be kind of interesting.
The details are way over my head. I'm just stoked you guys are here.
Let me just tell you this. We're using Skype. We're using a wireless modem. And then we're using my iPhone, and we're plugged in that way, too. So there's two ways to get to the station. And Terry Green, the station manager, is at the station kind of juggling the two feeds, making sure it sounds okay. And hopefully it does sound okay. We don't even know.
It sounds good down here, and it's great having you guys and KUSP in the parade. And happy holidays. And
thank you, Chip.
Yeah, we'll see you soon.
All right. Thank you very much,
Thanks,
Chip. Chip from the Downtown Association organizes this wonderful parade. There's literally thousands of people down here watching amazing and wonderful things go down Pacific Avenue. And, of course, I've always talked about Pacific Avenue as Pacific Avenue Mall, or Garden Mall, really. Mm-hmm. I always say that because I've grown up here and knew it. When I say the mall, people always think I mean Capitola, but I don't. I mean Pacific Garden Mall. But anyway, I interrupted you talking about
Bing.
Yeah,
it's been about half an hour, so I'll come back online and talk more about it.
So, Al, you're next to my story.
No, I'm just kidding.
So, Bing disappeared.
Why?
Now, hold on a second. Okay. Gizmodo.com wrote an article about this. Titled "If a Bing Falls in the Forest." .. And the first line is: "Sometime around 9:30 last night, Bing disappeared off the internet for half an hour, give or take." One question for you, or our question for you: did you notice?
I didn't.
And the whole idea behind this article is, you know, when Google goes down, everyone starts screaming, like on Twitter and emailing, and they message Gizmodo, they message TechCrunch, all of those websites, and say, "Hey, everyone, it's, you know, Google's down. This is awful." No one really, there was no hubbub.
No one's
about
using
Bing. No one's reliant on Bing.
People that are reliant on Bing recently bought a machine, and that's their default search place, and they don't know it's
Microsoft's exactly.
problem, right?
Exactly. They're using Bing because that's what Internet Explorer says to use, or just uses by default. And then the other thing that they mentioned is, here's from the article, Bing users don't bother complaining. They just use Google for half an hour. They're natural switchers anyway. They switched to Bing, whether or not they meant to or not. So it's not a big deal to shake up things for a bit. Google users, they're stubborn. And I think this is completely true. You know, like, also, I don't know. Maybe this is cruel of me, but who really cares about Bing? I mean, Google has Google Mail, Google Maps, Google Calendar, Google Docs. Like, they
do you
have...
work for? Did Google buy you, Ben?
No. Google bought. Well, okay. Google bought some airtime, but
yeah. I wish Gary was getting money from Google.
It's interesting you'd mention Twitter and all the people like going on Twitter saying, "Hey, you know, this isn't working," whatever. But that's how a lot of people are getting their news nowadays.
Yeah.
And you're using these tweet decks and things like that where you basically subscribe to just Twitters around your area. So when you're near like a movie or something that's going on, you can see people, "Oh, the line's really long," or, you know, it's a different kind of news. I mean, it's changed just from updating what the heck you're doing to your friends to actually being sort of a preferred news source, a extremely local, extremely timely news source.
Yeah.
Just to, you know.
So to be fair, I actually, just to say this, I actually do want Bing to compete with Google. I do want Microsoft to compete with Apple. The only problem I have is that they do a really bad job. At least right now, they've been doing a pretty bad job. So I kind of hope.
Well, let me ask you this, Ben. How good a job are you doing competing with Google right now? So you're not. So at least Microsoft's
trying. I'm not trying.
Yeah, because if he tried, boy.
It would be all over.
It would be a different kind of
If I tried, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, I'm gonna do a shout out to the audience again. Anybody out on Pacific Avenue wants to ask a tech question of the geeks? Come on over here and ask us. We're waiting for your questions, and we'll jump on to other wonderful news stories you've got, Al. I wouldn't say they're wonderful until I hear them. But you were talking to me last night about jumping out of an airplane, not with a jetpack or really a parachute, but something else.
Well, you know how I'm into jetpacks and things like that.
Well, who isn't?
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, this thing is it's a new. It's a prototype invention developed by the Special Parachute and Logistics Consortium, which is a German venture between two companies. And what this thing is, it's like a wing that you put on, and it's kind of a hard-shelled wing that like a six foot wingspan, and it has an attached helmet that's got like a heads up display.
Uh-huh.
And you jump. It's for high altitude jumping, jump missions. It's typically the kind of thing carried out by special forces. And it gives a glide ratio of 5 to 1, which means that if you drop from 30,000 feet, it'll allow you to glide about 30 miles. So
Whoa.
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't understand that. I mean, I thought it was just a wing for tricks and stuff. So you're saying that if you get dropped, you can then go at a horizontal distance of like 30 miles.
Yes. So you have a lot more distance. It's all, you know, you can't be picked up by radar. You're flying around. It's kind of like if you've ever read Starship Troopers.
Yes.
You know, they jump through the space.
No, they do that from out.
They do it from
air,
from space. Yeah. But I mean, this is kind of like we're not doing it from space because we're on just one planet. But
Right.
You do it from a plane, and then you can kind of fly around, and then eventually you do have a parachute that comes out, but they're actually working on a way to have this wing on you and then not use the parachute and have you land without the parachute. So you're jumping out of planes.
No, that doesn't sound like a good idea to me at all.
And they also are working on ways to put engines on these things.
So let me ask you, Al, is Alexander going to do this kind of thing? You know, jump out of airplanes with just wings?
He would probably do it right now if you asked him.
Yeah.
He's my little boy.
Yeah.
He's four, so.
So, have you read the series Red Mars, Green Mars, Blue Mars?
No.
They talk about that kind of thing on Mars because there was less gravity. So
Right.
You could actually have, you know, I think they talk about the cloth material that's part of their wing system expanding and getting rigid. And that makes a lot of sense when you're dealing with a lot less gravity. But on Earth, gravity is a harsh mistress.
Yeah. It's, you get close to the bottom there. And,
yeah, that's true.
You know, but
it's really the falling's not that big a deal.
No, it's just the end. You know, but there's a pretty cool thing. You know, I mean, it's getting closer to a jetpack. I mean, I just heard about this guy Yves Rossi who tried to cross some huge distance in a jetpack and failed. He tried to go 60 miles.
60 miles in a jetpack?
Yeah, he's already gone across the English Channel.
You say he failed. What does failed mean?
Is he trying again?
In the context of a jetpack?
Apparently he's okay. But it was over water.
You know what happened is he was driving along, he saw a donut store and stopped. Like, I got to get a donut.
Yeah.
Anyhow. Wait, we have a mobile phone orchestra?
Oh, no, that's my next news story.
Oh, okay, sorry. I thought that On the Mall was a Morgan.
I passed you that note there.
I see. You tricked me.
I tricked you.
Ben, what's your next story?
Well, so Stanford.
Oh, you know, just to be clear, we are taking tech questions from the audience. We got a microphone. Come on down to Geekspeak and ask us a tech question. We'll answer anything you can think of to ask us that's technical related. Come on in. Ask us about your camera. Come on down. Ask about your computer, your hard drive, whatever you want. We'll take your tech questions. Okay. What's going on
and
with the phone?
Thanks to Rick Philman for doing that.
Definitely.
So Stanford has a mobile phone orchestra now.
I think I heard about this. Well, I heard about a laptop orchestra at Stanford.
No,
this is a mobile phone?
This is iPhones. This is...
See, that sounds pretty cool to me. There's a lot of neat apps on the iPhone for music playing.
Oh, yeah. So,
One that plays the flute?
So, yeah, that's pretty much it. You guys should all check out the video and the audio recordings of it.
Up on geekspeak.org.
Yeah, it's these iPhones amplified with speakers attached to small gloves that they're wearing. And
ooh, cool.
They can do things like blow into the microphone to create sounds or
shake,
you know, mimicking raindrops or freeway track. Yeah, I mean, it's just such an amazing...
I bet it's amazing.
It's such an amazing input device.
What we should do is grab a copy of the audio, make sure it's okay, and play it on air. Because that'd be fun. Say, this
if
is, you know,
only
iPhones.
Borders had open internet. That's Borders a call to you for Borders.
You've got to have an open internet down here, no?
No, there's
that
one that's
Cruzeiro
very
hotspot?
Far away. I should have looked before I checked.
There you
Borders
go.
Is the only one with open internet, but they're too far away, so.
Okay. All right, well, we've got a couple questions from the audience at large. Hello, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. This is Ken from Santa Cruz,
Hi, Ken.
I just wonder, what are the odds we're going to see the singularity when computers are smarter than humans?
So what we're talking about here is the idea that artificial intelligence will emerge at some point in computer networks and computer systems, and when it does, because of the way technology advances, it will be above and beyond our intelligence at such a level so quickly that it will change the face of the planet and change the species as we know it. And and it's a Kurzweilian idea. It's a lot of different people's ideas. I think that for a long time I was completely subscribed to Kurzweil's ideas about the singularity effect. It's actually a lot of people, but Kurzweil I know the best. And I was really into that until I heard a really wonderful argument against it. And that is that as a system gets more and more complex, like intelligence, for example, has to be really complex, more and more software bugs get put into the system. So there's probably... Oh! So there's probably a point at which the bugs kind of counter a level of the complexity until it kind of stops. That's my feeling. Until we go past that, we're probably pretty stuck. If the singularity is going to happen, I think it's going to be modeling the human brain as close as possible and then just making it a lot faster. We might get smart.
They're getting close to modeling the human brain already. They've already gotten projects, and they're saying they're using it for simulations, not to actually run it. But, I mean, you know, once they got the thing modeled, I imagine.
You know, Cory Doctorow has
crazy
stuff
with it.
Thank you for the question. Yeah. Take care. Cory Doctorow has a wonderful little short story. I just listened to his podcast. Cory Doctorow's podcast, being a podcast, wonderful little podcast. He just talks about his books and stuff. But he has this wonderful story that was commissioned about the closing or the ending of the life of a intelligence computer. We now have something very loud happening, so we'll see how it goes. I can't really tell. Oh, it's a peace mobile.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong with a peace mobile.
It's got a big word peace on it.
Yep.
It doesn't have a peace sign, though.
No, it doesn't. I bet there's a peace sign on it somewhere.
You'd think they'd have a peace sign. If you have the word peace, if you go through the trouble to write out the word peace, you would have a peace sign.
Right.
Just the icon representation of peace.
So the idea was the decommissioning of the first artificial intelligence is set in the future, but the idea is that we got an artificial intelligence machine, one of them, and we didn't know what to do with it. Like, what do you do with it, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I know intelligent people.
Yeah.
You can't have dinner with it, really.
No.
And the other thing, my housemates and I were actually talking about this, how you it's a different way of thinking, like the way human minds process things versus the way computers process things, completely different ways of going about dealing with data. And so as a result, it'll at least be offset by the amount of time that we take to figure out how to process like that.
Right.
Like bubble up and everything.
Okay. Very, very cool. Ben, you got another one?
Not off the top of my head.
All right.
Al, do you have one?
What? Yeah, Al sure does. Al's got a whole bunch of them.
Oh,
you know
what?
We haven't done a robot update in forever and a day.
Man, I've been...
Do you know anything about robots?
Chomping at the bit for doing robot stories.
Good.
Well, let's just say there was a panel discussion at Stanford recently. It's the Ryan, I guess his name is Kalo, a fellow with the Stanford Center for Internet and Society, was speaking there. And his point was that he's from Stanford Law School, that the original manufacturer might not always be liable if a robot went haywire.
Okay, so if you build a robot, you sell it to somebody else, and that robot then throws you into a shredding machine.
Yeah.
The company that sold the robot's not necessarily
Well, let's just put it this way. There are no laws in the U.S. specifically governing robots, and discussion of them usually leads to, you know, Isaac Asimov's three laws of robotics.
Right. Okay, but let me go down to Sears or something and I buy a toaster. Mm-hmm. And then that toaster eats my hand intentionally. Mm-hmm. Isn't Sears kind of responsible for that?
Well, it depends. You know, they're specifically talking about robots here, which is, you know, the idea that I keep bringing up. You know, and people tend to consider a robot different than an appliance.
Yeah, it's
true. They bond more with a machine.
Well, also you can program them potentially. So I could buy a robot from you that's supposed to mow my lawn, mm-hmm. and then I could program it to mow my cats.
Right.
And that's not your fault because you made a mowing robot.
And you know, shoppers, you know, they personalize their Roombas.
Yeah.
You know, they name them and decorate them and do all these things. And what they're saying is there need to be ethics embedded in the systems.
Yep. All right. Thank you very much, Al, for the robot update. I felt good about that one. Mm-hmm. You know, I just noticed across the street is the Pacific Cookie Company. And doesn't that just sound delicious, a nice, warm, toasty cookie? Anybody else cold, Al?
Man, it is, like, freezing up here.
We got a wind.
I don't know about you
down.
Guys, but we're, like, in a wind tunnel.
Hey, horses.
Whoa.
Can't go wrong with horses.
Whoa.
We're down at the Pacific Garden Mall hanging out on Soquel and Pacific, checking out the parade and doing a live broadcast in the back of a truck. Earlier, of course, we were in the parade, and we're cold and loving it, and we got five more minutes to go, so let's get on with one more story. What's going on with Coke machines?
Coke machines. Okay.
I have to know this.
So Coke machines and hydrofluorocarbons. So hydrofluorocarbons are a potent greenhouse gas that we've been going on, trying to ban.
Trying to reduce. This is the whole hairspray craze in the 80s. Like, get rid of hairspray containers because they have these. Now they have propellant that's not, that doesn't go up to the upper atmosphere and destroy our ozone. But all right,
but HFCs are still in a number of things. One of them is the vending machines and coolers that you see that you buy Coca-Cola or Pepsi or whatever.
Why aren't they using a normal, like, Freon or something?
I'm not sure, but Coca-Cola has taken the lead in that and decided to ditch HFCs, which is really nice. So yeah, they're gonna, it looks like they're gonna buy about 150,000 HFC free units in 2010.
Cool.
Which is double the current speed of replacement. So it'll actually, they'll actually replace it double the speed.
They're
kind of
giving a kickstart on the machines to make sure that the
HFC.
Well, for Coke to do it, it's a really a big deal because they're such a huge company. I mean,
do they make?
If they printed one less word on their can, they'd probably save like 5 billion gallons of ink. You know, given the amount of product that they put out.
That's true. They just didn't paint their cans for a year. Right. The amount of paint they'd save.
They could feed
can.
The world.
And if they did it, everyone would know what it was.
Yeah, right.
Man, that's a great idea.
It's the silver can with no marking.
Sell that idea to Google.
You know what?
One more story, real quick.
Yes, there's a solar powered plane. It turns out. And they first...
That'd be bad today.
They first flew it. So, and it wasn't as big of a deal as it seems. They actually were not flying off of the solar power, but they have the plane that's outfitted with solar panels that actually physically flies. So the next step is hooking up those and everything. They're going to do...
the power from them?
They're going to do a 36-hour duration test next summer, and then eventually they're going to go all the way around the world with this solar
plane.
Very
cool. So... hopefully higher than the cloud structures.
Yeah.
And during the day.
But I mean,
you have to go the right speed.
They have to worry about night to day
transition.
It's almost sunset.
I'm not worried about the sun. I'm worried about the clouds.
They do have to worry about night to day transitions,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, you think?
I mean, you know,
they must
half
have
the
battery
time.
Packs.
Yeah. Well, no bad. They just glide for 12 hours. Anyway, fun stuff.
Very cool. Thank you. Well, I think we're coming up on the end of Geek Speak, and we probably don't have time for another question, unfortunately, but we do have time for Crazy USB of the Week, and we will do that in just 1 second. I want to mention, though, that Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 Soquel Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Wait, Don't Tell Me is a weekly hour-long radio quiz program. Each week on the radio, you can test your knowledge against some of the best and brightest in the news and entertainment world while figuring out what's real news and what's made up. On the web, you can play along, too. That's Wait, Don't Tell Me, today at noon and Sunday at 10 on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Whole Foods Market, offering items for holiday catering and entertaining needs. Whether it's a simple side dish or complete catered meal, everything is made without artificial colors, preservatives, or hydrogenated fats. Excuse me. Whole Foods Markets in Santa Cruz, Capitola, and Monterey. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used with permission. Al, to tell me what the crazy USB of the week is.
It's called Gboard. It's an external keypad for just Gmail shortcuts. Obviously, it plugs in through USB. You plug it in, and then you've got this little pad right next to your computer that is just filled with, like, the things you use in Gmail. You know, like Marcus, Spam, forward, reply, trash, just all your, it's 19 different Gmail shortcuts. So it's like a whole separate keyboard just for Gmail shortcuts.
Very cool.
Yeah.
But that's all it does.
Well,
one little keyboard on the side.
Usually computers come with a keyboard. Just thought I'd point that out.
That's true. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP, Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KOSP.org. This is Lyle Troxell on Pacific Avenue Mall. Thank you to Shakespeare's, to the theater company, to UCSC's theater department and the arts division for making this possible. You can learn more about the arts events at arts.ucsc.edu. Thanks to Rick Philman, who took the mic around to the crowd, to Joe Weiss and to Eric Mack for being in the cab of the truck and getting this all worked out, and thanks to Ben Jaffe, Al Luckow, and me, Lyle Troxell. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week. Well, I think that's it for being on the air. I think that's it. Terry's on now.
All right.
All right. Well, yeah, thanks. That was awesome.
Yep.
That was fantastic.
Let's build a fire.
Yeah,
we got through a lot of news stories.
We did faster than we normally do, didn't we?
Oh, yes. We got through...